Clinical psychologist Dr. Julie Smith has become a TikTok phenomenon. Since 2019, her short videos of clear, engaging advice about mental health issues have racked up about 500 million views on social media. She's more than 4.2 million followers on TikTok, 1.1 million on Instagram. Dr. Julie, as her fans call her, has a doctorate in clinical psychology, runs a private practice in Hampshire, and has spent 10 years working for the NHS. Wanting to make mental health education accessible to everyone, not just those who can afford therapy, Dr. Julie began filming and uploading her videos. They offer basic tips and tools people can use every day to improve their life and mental health. She's also now written a book, Why Has Nobody Told Me This Before? Everyday Tools for Life's Ups and Downs. Kia ora, welcome Julie.
Thanks so much for having me.
We're going to have a little taste of one of these, actually. I meant to do it a little bit earlier. Let's have a listen in to just an example of one of your TikToks that you've made available so people can get a flavour of this. This one's about social anxiety.
I'm a psychologist, and here's the top five things someone with social anxiety wants you to know. Number five, they do like you. Their battle is not with you, it's with their own fears. Number four, when they cancel at the last minute or they don't turn up, they do want to spend time with you, but the fear has won this time. Number three, they don't hate people. If they don't respond to texts or calls, it's likely that they're lonely, but even a simple interaction can be terrifying. Number two, they are sorry. They're sorry for always cancelling, for being a bad friend sometimes, and not being there for you as much as they want to be. And number one, don't give up on them. They're still the same person, and you don't need to fix everything for them, but don't underestimate the power of being there.
Our guest, Julie Smith, there with one of her TikTok videos. And interestingly, Julie, you're often using props to explain some of the relationship dynamics or some of the experiences that any of us can be having with our mental health. Tell me how all this started for you.
Yeah, so I was working in a very small private practice. It was just me. I was offering psychological therapies, and I noticed that a lot of people who were coming through for therapy found the educational aspect of it really helpful. A lot of people don't realize that when you go to therapy, you do talk a lot, but you also learn a lot about how your own brain works, how you can impact on your own mood, that kind of thing. And a lot of people found that part so helpful, so they could manage their own mental health day to day, that I just felt like people shouldn't have to pay to come and see people like me to find out how their own brain works, you know, that this should be available. So the aim was to put it out there and make it accessible, and it just so happens that everyone's attention seemed to be on social media, so we kind of decided to go there and put it out in on sort of videos. And short form video was such a great way to reach lots of people, so we made bite-sized 60-second videos with just a few kind of nuggets in there for people to take away. And it seems to sort of appears to be that people are really hungry for that information.
It was in February 2020, which is a very interesting time because that was right before lockdown, right, you had your first one go viral. I'm just trying to remember what the topic of that one was, actually. We were trying to find it and couldn't quite track that one down. But it's... it was a 60-second video. It was depression. It was depression is not always crying endlessly in dark rooms. Depression can be getting up, going to school or work, smiling at the relevant people and doing all the things you're supposed to do while feeling empty inside. And did you literally find you woke up one morning and all of a sudden it was what's happened to my simple little posting that I made?
Yeah, because I honestly thought it would be one of those projects you do because it feels like a good thing to do, right? It felt like the right thing to do, but I thought it would be one of those projects you do for a while and then it fizzles out because I really didn't expect that people would kind of listen, especially on places like TikTok where it was all dancing and comedy and these really exciting things. I thought, gosh, I'm either going to be trolled out of there or just completely ignored. It really surprised me that the opposite happened. And it really was the feedback from everybody. I was getting constant messages and emails from people saying, thank you, this was really helpful. I've got a few questions now. What's the next bit? Or, I'm waiting for the next video. Or, me and my family are working on this thing that you've described. Thank you so much. And we suddenly realized, gosh, we're reaching real people with real problems, and it's impacting them enough that they're bothering to find out my email, get in contact, and tell us their story. So then I just felt like, well, we can't stop this now. We've got to kind of do what we can.
We should talk about what you've, contributed yourself in order to make this happen, because this was sort of 10:30 at night, wasn't it? The husband on camera after the kids had gone to bed, Julie.
Yeah, that's how it works here because, yeah, I've got three children. So I'll work on things like scripts and stuff during the day and while my husband's at work and the kids are at school. And then, you know, I'll do the mum thing in the afternoon. And then once the children are in bed, then the camera goes on and we start sort of making videos and stuff like that. So, but we did it that way because we didn't really want it to impact the children and we thought it would be temporary. So we thought it was just going to sort of phase out at some point and it'll stop. So, but it, 3 years in, it hasn't. So, yeah. Here we are.
Yeah, and having to manage your own well-being as well, which is the classic, isn't it, always for physicians of any of any ilk. What do you think this is reflecting? Is it reflecting the way many people will go to get help these days in the first instance, which may be online? Is it also just reflecting the huge amount of unmet need?
Yeah, I think both of those. I think, people just have nowhere to go and to talk about these things. And I think also, you know, the sort of stigma around mental health and the discrimination that can occur if you talk about things in person meant that people were going online to talk about their distress because, you know, if you can be online and you can be anonymous if you want or need to be, and you can find these communities of people who maybe have similar experiences or who are sharing education around these things, and suddenly you have a safe space to discuss what you're going through. And so people are having conversations that they wouldn't have dreamed of having in person. And that's really kind of set this movement of people being able to talk about their mental health in the same way we talk about our physical health, which is, you know, how it should be. We should be able to address all of our health, whether it's psychological or physical.
The content of the videos, these are simple tips and tools for people to improve their mental health. And what is it that will make you choose a topic? And then, of course, the immense skill of condensing it down to a minute or in some instances just 15 seconds. What is the skill that you bring to that? And just explain a little bit more about what it is that can help someone just by focusing on some basic things.
Yeah, I think it really kind of became a creative challenge, you know, because there would be things I would talk about in therapy that I would take, you know, as long as necessary to talk about, you know, 20 minutes, half an hour. And there was me thinking, can I get any of this message across in 60 seconds and make it useful? And at first, I didn't really believe that was possible. But once you strip away the jargon and the repeating yourself over and over, you realize actually, yeah, the message can be really condensed and maybe we can add some sort of visual aspect in to make it more engaging. And maybe we can really kind of hone this down because actually, you know, if you do, I don't know, if you watch something educational, you really only take away one or two messages from it, no matter how long you're watching it for. So it was this idea of, you know, if someone's going to take away just one message, what do we want that to be? And so, yeah, it's become a real sort of creative challenge for us that we've sort of honed that craft, I guess.
You mentioned education as part of therapy. And look, we often see it on the TV, don't we? The therapist just sits there making noises with steepled fingers while someone, you know, pick Sopranos, pick your example, blathers on and on. But this this concept of education and this concept of taking responsibility for your mental health was another of your TikToks, and I can't remember which one, where you said it's not your fault, whatever you're dealing with, but it is your responsibility to deal with it as, you know, as best you can. I'm paraphrasing poorly, probably. Can we talk about this concept of metacognition, the fact that we all have the power to think about our thoughts?
Yeah, so, you know, your brain has this incredible ability to think, right? And we have lots of thoughts, but we also have this ability to think about the thoughts that we're having, right? So, and that's metacognition, is your thoughts about your thoughts. So you might be thinking, God, I've just made so many mistakes today. Why am I so clumsy? Da, 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 da. But then you also might step back and think, wow, look, I'm being so self-critical today. Look how that, you know, how I'm just hammering myself constantly in my thoughts. So you have this ability to step back and review what you're thinking about. And that's really the main tool that therapy uses. So you'll go into therapy and you might have kept a thought diary, for example, and you'll look over that and you'll think, okay, you know, what are these processes, what are these patterns of thinking, and how are they impacting on then how I feel, and how are they impacting on how I behave and how I show up in my relationships or at work or at home and all of those things. And you, so it's, it really is that ability to kind of get a bird's eye view on what's going on in your mind that enables you to kind of solve the problems or break the cycles that you get stuck in. Because when you're in it, it's really hard to see the wood for the trees. And then you're not able to break any of the cycles because you're just going around and around. It's only by stepping back. So using that ability to think about your thoughts is just hugely powerful.
So there's the emotional force of the moment where you're just wallowing in whatever the moment is, but there's that opportunity at some point to say, hey, I am doing this, and to step back and be your own analyst in that respect. It doesn't mean it instantly goes away, but it's the start, right, is to see what's going on. Let's look at or have a listen in to another of your TikToks. And listeners, there's visuals and props and all sorts of things accompanying these, but this one is about catastrophizing.
If your thoughts are always going to that worst case scenario, I'm Dr. Julie, and here are my top 5 tips to stop catastrophizing. Number 5, look out for those catastrophizing thoughts. If you don't notice them, you can't do anything about them. Number 4, when you spot a catastrophizing thought, label it. This is crucial because you're recognizing that it's a biased thought, not a factual statement about what will happen. And number 3, don't try not to think about it. If you do that, you're already thinking about it. Instead, allow it to be there as one possible perspective. Number 2, shift your focus. Anxious thoughts are ideas about the future. So ground yourself in the present moment by focusing on something in the here and now, like an object or your breath. And number 1, start to consider alternative perspectives. You know the worst that could happen. What's the best that could happen?
That it's something we all sink into at times. And do we normally know that we are catastrophizing? It's just, it becomes quite addictive, doesn't it? And quite hard to climb out of, Julie.
Yeah, and I think partly the sort of impact of it is that we don't recognize it when it's happening. You know, that it just, we get into those cycles and we take on each thought as if it's factual and as if it's the best version of our reality right now, when actually is one possible perspective. So it's that whole metacognition thing. It's that being able to kind of notice that you've had a thought, see it for what it is, which is a bias, right? It's a, okay, my mind has presented to me the worst possible case scenario here. It's a horror movie playing out in my head. I can look at it with this perspective. This is one possibility, but there are also other possibilities. And as soon as you see that, that it's a possibility rather than the only possible version of reality, that you kind of take some of the power out of it, and then you get to choose to consider other options. Whereas if you're only looking at that catastrophizing thought as the possibility, then it's going to have complete impact, you know, complete power over how you feel, how you behave, all of those things. It's about the process of kind of taking back some of the power from those sorts of thoughts.
Dr. Julie Smith is our guest. We are talking about her book, Why Has Nobody Told Me This Before? We're also talking about her social media videos that are hugely, hugely popular and have many, many views. 500 million, I think I mentioned earlier. 10:20 it is. You're listening to 9 to Noon. The coincidence of the migration that you made into social media coincided with the extra stresses experienced by everybody during the pandemic. And one of those certainly is anxiety. And anxiety also seems to be identified as kind of the pandemic of our young people, of our young generation. I'm interested in your comment on that. And also, could we talk about some of the tips, including physical things we can do to calm anxiety? How do you define it in the first instance?
So anxiety, I mean, people talk lots about both stress and anxiety, and really they're based on the same sort of biological stress response. We only have that one stress response, but the words we use tend to depend on how we conceptualize it in the moment. So when we talk about anxiety, we tend to be talking about those moments where we feel under threat, or when there's sort of fear-based responses to that. Whereas stress is often the sense that you get when there's more demands placed on you than you have the ability or the time to meet. So I don't know, let's say you have a break at work and you've got just enough time to go and post that parcel. So you get out to the post office and you get there and there's a huge queue and you suddenly realize you haven't really got time for this. And you notice that sort of increase in your level of alertness. So you'll have kind of maybe your heart will start pounding a bit, or your breathing will change. And you would conceptualize that as kind of stress if maybe you had a meeting to get back for, but you might conceptualize that as anxiety if when you got back to that meeting, you knew you were going to have to face a boss that you've not been getting on with and they were going to humiliate you in front of everyone if you were late. You know, that would be fear of that humiliation. So then you would call it anxiety. So that, you know, they are different in terms of how we talk about them, but it's that same biological response that we're experiencing. So really the things that help are the same. So probably the most quick thing to teach people that, and the most fast acting way that you can bring anxiety and stress down, is by changing your breathing. So when you're anxious, your breathing gets very fast and shallow. So it's like a, and you might not even notice you're doing that, and you're getting in lots of extra oxygen that's fueling that response, but you're also not then getting rid of carbon dioxide efficiently. So if you can slow your breathing down, so you take in a big breath, in breath, but then you take in one extra little in breath on top of that. And what you're doing is you're opening up those little sacs in your lungs so that you can get rid of more carbon dioxide with your out breath. And then when you do breathe out, you breathe out for longer than you breathe in for. So you're kind of a, so you kind of count out the out breath for as long as you can. Do that for just a few moments and you're going to bring down that pounding heart rate. And once your heart rate slows down, you're stopping that sort of, you're not fueling that response so much. At the same time, you're more efficiently getting rid of the carbon dioxide that would make you feel more stressed as well.
Burnout is another subject. It's not, I don't want to say it's not all dealing with our maladies, this book. It's also, you know, talking about motivation and what a meaningful life is. But burnout, goodness, your experience with the NHS, our medical profession here, our nurses here, our hospitals here. But, you know, this is kind of across the board. People just at the point where, well, at what point? Again, please describe burnout and then your advice to people.
Yeah. So, you know, burnout is when we are continually triggering that stress response and not really getting anything back for it in the way of be it replenishment, nourishment, social connection, you know, all of those things. So, you know, stress is that output of your resources. And when you have that output of resources, your brain wants something back for that. So if you don't, it's a bit like driving your car in second gear on the motorway. There's only so long you can do that for. Or it's like taking cash out of a bank account without ever putting anything back in. You know, at some point you'd be running on zero. So, you know, burnout is that sort of running on fumes feeling where you're exhausted, you can't concentrate, you're irritable, your appetite changes, you have that kind of tired but wired feeling. So you're so exhausted at the end of the day, but you might not be able to sleep because you're so wired from the day and worries that you've got. You might become kind of cynical at work or lose your kind of motivation for it, all of those sorts of things. And it's really, you know, your body is sort of telling you, you know, enough, I need something back now. I need to rest and replenish. And we have to take it seriously. It's linked with just so many physical and mental health problems. You know, it doesn't get better by itself. You have to take it seriously. But the trouble is, because we term it a mental health issue, it's taken less seriously, I think. And then, you know, you got to sort of think about those days when you need to call in sick, you're more likely to say, oh, I've got a throat infection than, you know, I didn't sleep last night and I feel terrible. And that's because we think or we believe that other people will take that more seriously. So, you know, a lot of what I say to people is trying to get that message across about how seriously to take it if you are burnt out.
The small breaks, trying to get things that are in your head down on paper, because otherwise your head will keep putting them back in front of you. At the more serious end, those circuit breakers are challenged as well, obviously, Julie. A listener's asking, can your advice be applied to young kids, 7-year-olds, worried about the planet? And then that worrying loop is worrying me, asks a listener.
The science and the education that's in there applies to everyone. I think when it comes to young children, safety is a primary need. So, you know, one of their most primary needs is to feel safe most of the time. And so it's difficult because while we're educating children about the planet, We also need to be really careful about how we're applying that education. So if we're just telling kids, you know, there is a crisis looming and no one's doing anything about it, then you're kind of placing this massive problem on a seven-year-old's shoulders. And whereas, you know, if we can talk about those things as, you know, a reality, but then we can also help them to feel a sense of control over things. So thinking about the things that we can do to help, but then also creating some sense of reassurance as well that we are safe at the moment and that they are being looked after, because their brains aren't developed enough to be able to solve all those problems yet. And so we have to kind of, I think, keep that fairly limited in terms of, you know, really considering their life stage and how developed or undeveloped they are. And so for any parents kind of experiencing that, where kids are being taught things at school that are then worrying them, focus on, you know, reassurance, safety and security, because once children feel safe, they are then able to take risks and go out and do things in a normal, natural way when they're ready for them.
There's a wonderful chat here that you've got in the book about there's this mood pitfalls to watch out for. But it's the thought bias again. You've used that several times, that we need to be aware of our own biases, internal biases, and step back and analyse them and save money on the therapist. But that's interesting. One is mind reading, right? Making assumptions about what others are thinking or feeling. Overgeneralisation, taking one event and using it to generalise about others. Egocentric thinking, assuming that others have the same perspective and values as us. Emotional reasoning, I feel it, therefore it must be true. Musts and shoulds, these relentless and unrealistic expectations. Anyone and every one of us will recognise those tendencies in ourselves. And what do you do with the knowledge? Once you've recognised your bias, what do you then do to ease whatever's going on in your mood or to change either your mood and or your behaviour?
I think the key is to notice them in real time. So in therapy, that starts in hindsight. So you might turn up at therapy once a week and you'll be looking back on the week and you'll be noticing when you were catastrophizing or when you were engaging in kind of emotional reasoning or black and white thinking, and you'll label it, right? And then you'll be able to look back and see how that was a bias that then impacted on your emotions and your behaviors and got you into a cycle. And by doing that, you kind of build up this awareness, so much so that you start to then notice things in the moment. And that's the key, is if you can notice a biased thought when it arrives, then you can see it for what it is, step back from it. And it takes some of the, just by noticing that it's a bias and labeling it that way, you've already taken some of the power out of it, because then you know that you're free to consider other perspectives as well. So it's still there. You haven't got rid of it, but you're able to think in a more informed way. So it's a sort of gradual change of just building that awareness, looking for it, labeling it, noticing it, and looking for alternatives all the time.
Just finally, you write about the problem with "I just want to be happy." And look, it's funny, this experience the world's gone through with the pandemic and now economic strife and a war thrown in for good measure, right? A war in Europe for good measure. That sort of couple of decades where, you know, social media and everything was all about be happy, you can have it all, you can do it, da, 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 da. Very few people get to have a life that unfolds like that. And you write about the problem with "I just want to be happy," and you write about the search instead for a life of meaning. Is this something that we fundamentally need to grasp, that our life experiences will be manifold and they won't all be positive, and you can't just create a perfectly happy life?
I think so. I think this sort of idea or ideal that was kind of set up and is often perpetuated online, you know, this idea that you must be not only happy but also motivated and productive all of the time, you know, that you need to be seen to have it all and enjoy it all, and that is the be all and end all. But humans aren't set up to be happy all the time, not even most of the time, probably. We just set up to survive, but we have this intrinsic sort of human need to find meaning in things, and And when you do have find meaning in something, it makes all of those other things easier. So when there is hardship or when there is something to endure that doesn't make you happy all the time, when there is a sense of meaning behind it, it makes that much easier to get through. And, you know, it's a bit like, I don't know, you set yourself a goal, let's say you set yourself the goal to climb a mountain. The climbing the mountain part doesn't make you happy. You know, you imagine that you're going to be all smiles when you get to the top, but you're only at the top for a few minutes, maybe a few hours at most. And so, you know, you have to have some sense of meaning for why you're getting, you know, enduring that awful climb with, you know, changing temperatures and altitude sickness. And, you know, it's awful, right? It's a lot to go through for someone to climb a mountain. So there has to be some level of meaning or rationale or idea for why they're doing that over and above the fact that you might smile at the view when you get to the top.
That is such a takedown of the Instagram life, isn't it, in some ways? And it describes why it can be so empty when we're all taking the selfies and not looking at the view and when we're almost aping or copying what we think someone else's perfect life is like. Rather than working out our own. Julie, thanks for your time. Dr. Julie Smith, Why Has Nobody Told Me This Before is her book. Check out also her TikTok. There's a link on our webpage to some of her TikTok videos there.